Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, it's Animal Instinct time. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I'm here with the Hippie Hive Honeybee Cooperative from Jamesport, Long Island. It's a honeybee kind of day over here, and I've got a studio full of guests, and I can't wait to get started. Hey, everybody. I'm so psyched to have company in the studio. It's been very lonely this time for me. I'm really happy to have you guys here. So I'd like you to introduce yourselves, please. Just tell us your name and how long you've been working with honeybees.
Okay, I guess I'll start. I'm Susan Mary, and I've been working hands-on with honeybees. This will be my third year. I started at Bee Camp with the Salt Air Farm.
I love it.
Prudence Heston was my first teacher, and that was 2 years ago. And then last year around this time, I was really anxious to have hives again with my friend Sarah, who's also a beekeeper. And, I think probably Diane's going to tell the story about how the co-op got started, but we started last year in February, and it was a wonderful year. So we're starting on our third year. I'm starting on my third year as a beekeeper.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And my name is Diane, and I'm going into my second year of beekeeping. I started last winter. And very excited, and thank you so much for having us.
Oh, thank you for being here. I love what you guys are doing, and I want to get the word out about it, because I think it's really smart, and I think it's really important, so this is good.
Well, thank you. I'm Sarah Shepherd. I'm a beekeeper and herbalist from Shelter Island, New York, and I have been keeping bees for since 2009.
Oh, wow.
Hands-on work, yeah.
So are you kind of in charge of this whole thing?
I co-direct it with my partners here, Susan and Diane.
Nice. So let's start at the beginning. What is the Hippie Hive Honeybee Cooperative?
Well, we're a group of women from the East End of Long Island who've come together because of the crisis in the beekeeping community, crisis of bees. Mm. And we've come together to both learn about bees and learn how to take care of bees, and then to turn around and teach people about that also, teach people about the crisis and teach people about what we can do to help bees, which is you can become a beekeeper, of course, but also about what you plant in your yard that will help pollinators, and also about not using toxic things to spray in your yards and that would hurt them.
Mm-hmm. And where is it really located? I know it's in Jamesport, but is it just in someone's backyard? Or?
Oh, no. It's on a farm. Mm-hmm. It's on an organic farm, the Golden Earthworm Organic Farm, which is an 80-acre farm. And Maggie and Matt were so generous to let us have some space there, and it's just been a very successful experience for us.
And so how does it work, since you've got a co-op and you've got bees, like, How does this all come together? Do you guys split work or how?
Well, yes, we do. You know, we come together. There's about last year, we had 15 members, mm-hmm. and the plan was, and we did a pretty good job of it, to meet once a month on Wednesday evening for hands-on work with the hives, and then we had work days interspersed along the months when things happened. When we would build the hives, we had a day when we all painted the hives. Of course, we all get together when the bees arrive, and we put them in the hives. And probably the most successful day is the honey harvest day, and everybody showed up on that day. So, you know, some people come more than others. Mm-hmm. But we probably have a core group of about, out of the 15, about 8 who show up pretty regularly.
And so, like, what are the daily duties of taking care of hives?
It's not really a daily duty.
Cool.
You know, I think that's probably a misconception, because really, you know, the bees are doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
We give them a very safe place to be. We build beautiful hives and welcome them into the hives. And then they start to do the work. Mm-hmm. It's much more labor intensive in the springtime. Mm-hmm. When you're it's building the hives and putting the bees in the hives and what have you. But then once you get to the honey harvest, there's not that much to do after that. We probably, check in before that, maybe once a week, and mm-hmm. then after that, it becomes less and less.
So do you ever give them, food or give them extra water, things like that?
Well,
can you?
We can, and we do, and maybe Sarah would like to talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So in the springtime when our bees arrived, they come in packages or they come in a smaller hive called a nucleus.
Oh, wow.
And we install them into a bigger hive, the hives that Susan Mary was describing. They're Langstroth hives. It's a commercial hive. It's stacking the boxes one on top of each other like a filing system.
Okay.
So in the springtime, we put a feeder on top. Mm-hmm. We make them a dilution of sugar syrup using organic sugar, and that's our supplement.
So is that, besides pollen, what is pollen made out of? Are they basically just eating sugar?
So they go out and they travel from flower to flower. Mm-hmm. Usually they stay on the same type of a flower, and they're collecting pollen. They're collecting propolis from those flowers, returning it to the hive, mm-hmm. and feeding it into their hive.
It's amazing. And so what is your all's relationship with the bees? Do you think that they know you guys? I know this is such a bizarre question, but I had to ask it.
Absolutely. Well, bees, it's about instinct. And I think we come to the hives with wanting to serve, wanting to make a better environment for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they respond to that. So in a way, they smell fear
when
you enter a hive with that. They respond to chaos and loud noises, of course. Mm-hmm. But so when we come in with our sage and our herbs and our songs, I think they do respond to that.
That's really cool. And so for the newbies that you've got, I've got to believe that the first couple times you're working with bees and hives, it's got to be kind of nerve-wracking. How are they doing, getting used to all of it?
So when you say newbies, are you referring to new beekeepers?
No, yes. I'm
okay.
Sorry, that was really a bad pun. I didn't even think of that.
No, just to... to make the listeners aware, so
yes,
you're
please.
Referring to young
to humans,
yes. And to new beekeepers.
Yes.
So, some of our members in the co-op did have experience with bees before, and mm-hmm. Many of them did not. So, some of them want to be hands-on in the hive. Some of them prefer to observe mm-hmm. in the way of learning, as opposed to being more hands-on. So, I think it's what people want to bring to it and what they want to take away from
That's
it.
That's cool. So basically, whatever anybody's feeling or what their ability is, you guys are able to accept that and work with it. So it's not you're scared? Too bad.
Absolutely.
You have to do this.
And we all have different talents that we bring forth to the group. So some of us, that's in PR. Some of that's with our logo. Some of it is more hands-on and actual skills with the bees and helping that with others.
That's very, very cool. And so what challenges are you guys finding that comes with taking care of hives?
Yeah. there's the natural challenges, of course, the climate change,
mm-hmm.
The weather that we're having outside now. Wintertime is really tough. The bees are inside their hive right now in a small huddle about the size of a grapefruit right
now.
Conserving their energy, keeping the hive consistently warm throughout mm-hmm. the winter. So I would say that's a natural struggle. On top of the struggles out there, when our bees leave, they are home. They're susceptible to what people are spraying in their yards.
Yeah, totally.
For sure. Absolutely.
It's a good point. And that area of Long Island, it's beautiful, but there definitely are a lot of people that are using pesticides on their gardens or hiring, regular gardeners, that kind of thing.
Oh, and the vineyards, too.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, mm-hmm. Do they spray?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they also bring in bees. It's it's an important thing for their industry as well. So hopefully they're learning that relationship, but... the fact that bees can be picked up and travel and sent to other parts of the country is really quite amazing.
Such a trip. Where do you guys get your bees from?
So our bees, they come from lots of different ways. You can order them through the mail,
which
is really quite amazing to have the UPS man come with pounds of bees to your yard.
Just don't tell them what's in the box. They'll be fine.
Well, they clearly see what's in the box.
Oh, no.
It's see-through. It's it's about the size of a shoebox, and it contains about 10,000 live living bees, a queen included.
Wow.
So, and they are shipped to us. So that's one way to get them. Mm-hmm. The other way I talked about was the nucleuses, which is it's a smaller hive. They have a home to defend. The packages, they come with no home to defend. It's a queen and bees, nothing wow. else. With the nucleuses, they get foundation, they have babies, mm-hmm. they have a food source, they have honey in there. So it gives you that jump start on beekeeping for the season. So this year, our bees will be coming from a man named Chris Kelly, another beekeeper on Long Island, who'll be providing our bees for us. So.
Cool. Wow. So then, for someone that would be starting out, I mean, this is all complicated. So if anybody wants to be a beekeeper, like, either contact these women or do a lot of research regarding this, because this isn't something, you know, this is not a weekend project. But so I assume getting a nucleus is better than just getting a box of bees.
There's different ways to looking at that. Mm-hmm. With getting those a nucleus as well, you can also bring in contaminants such as pesticides from where your bees are coming from, whether they're used in the hives or in the case of varroa mites and different kind of parasites that could travel along with the bees. So you do have to be careful.
That's scary, actually, mm-hmm. to think that you could, like, those so you could travel. Infect an entire hive.
Absolutely. And we order our bees from all over the country, so a lot of times they're coming from the south. They mm-hmm. can come from California. And
so funny.
It's
I think one of the things that the Hippie Hive Co-op would like to see eventually would be, and I think a lot of beekeepers on Long Island now would be to see if we can't raise up bees, Long Island bees,
yeah,
you know, and not have to depend so much on getting our bees from other areas.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a big dream.
And is that because, I mean, with all the problems that the bees are having, are there more problems in the Northeast compared to the rest of the country?
Oh, no. There's problems everywhere.
Yeah. So sad. Can we talk about that a little bit, actually? I mean, I know it's a bummer, but I think it's important that people know.
It's one of the reasons that we have the Hippie Hive Honeybee Co-op.
Yeah.
Maybe Diane wants to talk about that a little bit, why we started it.
Okay. So last winter, I invited some friends over for movie night, and Sarah had brought a documentary over called The Queen and the Sun. Queen of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched it, and we were inspired, to say the least. And afterwards, we all kind of agree that something needs to be done. We need to do something. Shortly after that night, I had contacted my friend Maggie over at the Golden Earthworm, and I asked her, I said, I would love to start a co-op. How do you feel about keeping our hives on your farm? Because I knew it was organic, and that's ideally where I wanted the hives. And open heart, open mind, she said yes.
Awesome.
So I went to Sarah and Susan Mary. I said, I am starting a co-op. Not knowing anything about starting a co-op, I went to them and I said, I am starting this up. And they said, we would love to sit in on the meeting with Maggie.
Mm.
And we did, and we started it, and we're doing it. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
So it came, the idea came out of watching this documentary mm-hmm. about the danger, how endangered the bees are. And because, and not just the bees, but our food, our food and us, we're all endangered because of this situation with the bees. So we decided we needed to do something. Diane led the charge.
I love it. And it's great that you guys are doing it on Long Island, too, because so much food is grown out there that to educate everyone that's out there, I think, is really, really important because they're closer to it. You know, it's like in the city, it's in the past 5 years, I've noticed in the summer, you know, typical garbage can in New York, you know, when I was a child, it'd be like bees and wasps and yellow jackets and craziness all in the trash. And now you're really lucky to see two or three, if that even, you know. And so this past summer, I think I saw one monarch butterfly and that's it. So it's getting really scary. And, you know, when you're in the city, you get so out of tune in it. You're just caught up in the pigeons and the sparrows, and that's pretty much it. You don't notice. But, like, where you guys are, it's really extreme because, you know, it's what you're used to seeing is no longer there. And I think that you guys can get through better to people in your neighborhoods than, for example, I can to people in the city because we're just so disconnected at this point from that, you know?
Absolutely.
So I love that you've named your queens after powerful women. And how have they been doing?
I think they really enjoy that attention and respect. They've been doing very well. And very interestingly, too, you know, we had three hives that we named, which we did in ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
It was really quite lovely. We did it on the new moon in June, which is the honeymoon.
Cool.
It was the day that Maya Angelou passed.
Oh, no way.
And so we named named one hive for her.
Aww.
We named our middle hive for her. And then the first hive, the hive to her left, we named Fatima, who is a goddess of the moon and also Muhammad's daughter.
Lovely.
Yeah, and we named the hive to her right after Hera, who is a Greek goddess, mother goddess, consort of Zeus.
I love it.
So I think they very much enjoyed it, but it was very interesting because the rest of the year we were able to talk about the hives in respect to them.
It's a great idea.
So Fatima, Maya held her own. Maya held her own all season long, but Fatima was unbelievable. She was so productive.
Awesome.
And it really does all depend on the queen.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a queen who can really rev up her hive and get them working, mm-hmm. and lays a lot of eggs and has a lot of babies and has a lot of daughters. They're almost all daughters. They produce a lot, mm-hmm. right? If you have a more layback queen, like our Hera was kind of layback, they did not produce as much honey.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't produce anywhere near as much honey.
Really?
It was really fascinating, the three of them. And in fact, she didn't produce, when we came to honey harvest, we decided to not take any honey from that hive,
mm-hmm.
because we wanted to leave as much as we could for them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we only harvested 8 frames
wow.
out of the 3 hives, because it's one of our part of our purpose is to keep the bees healthy.
Yeah.
And that's their food.
Yeah.
Most commercial honey makers harvest all of the honey.
Mm-hmm.
They do 2 harvests. They do a harvest in late June, early July, and they do a harvest at the end of the summer, early September. And they take all of the honey, and then to get the bees through the winter, they feed them sugar water
mm.
or corn syrup.
Mm.
Well, so it's really theirs.
Yeah.
So we left most of it for them.
Oh, I'm excited to see what your harvest will be this year, then.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how they... We'll see how they get through the winter, and we're also growing our co-op.
That's great.
We've expanded from 15 members to I think 24 members.
Great.
And we're going to add 3 more hives this year.
That's fantastic.
So
we're going to take a quick break. I am talking to the Hippie Hive Honeybee Co-op from Jamesport, Long Island. We'll be back in just a minute.
You are listening to Spreadin' Honey by the California Honey Drops.
You better do what you want when you get up in the morning, 'cause it won't be long before you're dead and gone.
Yeah,
no, there ain't no telling. Yeah, we all just bet. Just plan our hands.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
And
we
we are back. I am talking to the Hippie Hive Honeybee Co-op based out of Long Island. And next question. Ladies, you're all in the healing arts. Is there anything you do to help the bees and hives that might be considered unusual or unique?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about it before. As I said, we really kind of consecrated the ground that the hives are on doing this ritual in June. Mm-hmm. And, you know, intentionally naming the queens and putting out our intentions to what we you know wanted to do for the bees. Mm-hmm. And I guess for the community in general.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, with some of the gifts that I brought to the hives were plants, of course, plants that the bees would respect. Yeah. That would protect the hives, the energy of the space, and for us as well. So rosemary, particularly
nice,
lemon balm, just some beautiful food. So.
Cool.
And I think Sarah mentioned before, you know, when you work with hives, you smoke the bees, mm-hmm, before, just to calm them down a little bit.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it too much because it takes them a while to get over it, but mm, you want to calm them down a little bit. And we put sage in our smoke,
aww,
too, so it's really quite enjoyable experience.
Yeah, we use the ceremonial sage.
Ceremonial sage.
You know, it's funny. It's when I was working at a vet's office years ago, I used to smudge the place constantly. And it turns out that in the Middle Ages, when the bubonic plague was going on, they would smudge because it actually kills flying organisms. So this could be a really great way to keep the hive healthy as well, in case there's something coming in that's a little shady. You know, it'll get rid of it. And so, actually, you know what? I want to know this. I've never known. About how many bees are in each hive?
Oh. So our hives start off with small clusters, a few pounds of bees, which is equivalent to probably about 10,000.
Wow.
10,000 bees would they begin with.
Uh-huh.
That builds up throughout the summer. The queen is laying between 1,500 to 2,000 eggs a day.
My God.
If she's prolific. So she lays more eggs a day than she weighs.
Wow.
So that cycle continues throughout the summertime, and hives can reach up to nearly 100,000 bees in their hives at the height of summer.
So do they ever get, like, overcrowded? Do you have to
absolutely
deal with that?
Absolutely. And actually, they deal with that on their own. So in the autumn, they decide to remove the drones, and the drones are the male bees, mm-hmm, from the hive. So the males don't do too much within the hive. They don't bring in pollen. They don't clean their cells. They
so
don't even
funny
feed themselves. They rely on their sisters to feed,
really,
them. So at the end of August, it's really quite interesting to see the females in the hive grabbing their brothers and carrying them out of the hive to conserve what they'll be going into the winter. So drones consume more honey. So
are they just kind of like, see ya?
They say see ya. And and the hive is pretty much the queen with her daughters into the wintertime till about mid-January,
wow,
which we're about now, when she'll start laying again.
And Sarah, you can't forget about the swarms.
And the swarms. The beautiful swarms. So that's another natural phenomenon.
Oh, tell me about the swarms.
Is that most bees?
It sounds like, ah!
It is. It's a natural phenomenon that the bees really take control of. So beekeepers try to manage that kind of behavior, which, mm-hmm, isn't so easy. There's lots of different ways to manage that, from playing with the size of the hive, taking out the queen cells as you see them in the hive.
Wow.
But at certain parts of the season, usually May and June are a good swarm time for the bees, that they decide that it's a little too crowded in here, that I think we may start a little hive over there, and the queen takes off.
Really?
A majority of the hive goes with her. Let's say about 10,000 of them. They like a vacuum out of the hive, this unbelievable sound, and it's called swarming. It's a really incredible phenomenon to be a part of, to witness, and on the,
wow,
other end, to capture. So sometimes those swarms, if we are able to, are captured and, mm-hmm, to put into another hive to start another hive.
Wow. Yeah, because the only time I've ever seen any kind of swarming is, like, I mean, honestly, like Bugs Bunny cartoons, when, like, the bees are mad at someone and they attack them.
Absolutely,
you know?
And they're really not mad. It's the most docile time in their,
really,
in their existence. Their hand, you can handle them with your bare hands.
Wow.
It's really quite an amazing, it's amazing feat. My 9-year-old daughter was out there in the summertime, this summer, handling a swarm of bees.
That's super cool. So I know that the bees are in the hive right now, but, like, are they awake? Are they dormant? What's going on in there? Are they eating? Like,
a little bit of both. So they're conserving their energy in that ball.
Mm-hmm.
When it's less than 45 degrees, they don't like to break out of that cluster. So, mm-hmm, they're in a tight cluster around their queen, still feeding her, still using the resources in the hive if they have some,
mm-hmm,
the pollen, the honey, to feed themselves. But they conserve this time of year. So,
you know, it's kind of interesting. They do the same thing that the penguins do to keep warm in the wintertime. The daughter bees start in the center, and then they'll move out to the edges and move back in again, you know, as they get warm.
Funny.
Same kind of movement. But the queen stays in the middle because they're keeping her warm.
Yeah, yeah.
With their little movements, right?
So they're not really hibernating in a way they are.
Yeah. Wow, that's a trip.
And they're still remaining doing their work in the hive now this time of year.
So is there anything that the bees don't like? Like, can you do something and just really just bum them all out at one time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would say number one are the pesticides that we're using on our lawn stay, on our sidewalks, on the food that they're getting their pollen, their propolis, and their food source from.
Yeah. I think that, actually the bees themselves would get upset around, you know, if there's a lot of frenetic energy and a lot of people who are very frightened and frightened of them.
Yeah.
If you can get them all worked up. And when you go into the hives, when you're doing this work, what you really want to do is be very, very calm, very calm and very gentle and very focused. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why we wear, our veils and full suits. Because when you're covered, I mean, at least for me personally, when I'm covered, I don't have to worry about being stung.
So
my fear, even if it's an unconscious fear, is way down.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to really work with them without all of that, to not have the fear so that I can do. But right now, I like that. I find myself not using my gloves as much as I did when we first started. But that's one of the things, to be very calm around them, very focused and calm and gentle. They like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're very busy and very frenetic, you can hear them. Mm-hmm.
Really?
You can hear them.
They give us
start
their
cues. To get very flustered and aggressive. They're protecting.
Yeah.
They're protecting. So.
Wow. Well, it's good that you get a warning at least, and it's not just, attack bees. So that helps. But, like, for example, when you have people that come to the hives, when you educate to, like, crowds of people, as long as everybody's calm, everything's good. But let's say you've got like a kid who's, a baby who's crying or something. Like, do you have to worry about that? Is it something that's so sensitive that you're like, oh no, get them out of here? Or is it just kind of like, everything's fine?
I have to say children are the most gentle and they the least fear. It's the grown-ups that are swatting or a little more nervous of the idea. Children are really open to that. And yeah.
That's cool. So, Diane, what has beekeeping taught you about yourself?
Wow. Well, I'm kind of just talking about that fear. I always had a fear of bees, and I always wanted to beekeep, and I found myself face-to-face with a hive, and I am fully suited. I do wear a suit.
Cool.
But it's interesting because at the beginning, I had a fear, and now I don't. I'm more calm with them, and it's interesting because my daughter comes with me, and she only wears a veil.
Really?
Yeah, and sometimes she won't even wear gloves, and she'll pick up the frames.
Oh, you're kidding!
No, and here I am with gloves, a full suit.
Totally, like tongs from 20 feet
away. And here she is with just a veil and hands-on, and she loves it. She absolutely loves it. So it's interesting. It's taught me to that we are so connected and to not have fear.
Yeah. I just love what you guys are doing. And I mean, the fact that the hives are mostly female and then you guys are all female in terms of doing this together. I think it's really, really important these days. And I think that, it's funny. It comes with bees. It's like, it just kind of seems like a no-brainer to have a co-op that's all women, and to educate this way because of the hive itself being, 95 or 98% female as well. Do you have men that have been trying to join and things like that?
I think a couple men have asked. But it changes the energy. We have a very particular energy in this group of women. And we don't have anything against our male friends.
The drones.
our drones.
And it didn't
but I think it's also important for us to be doing this as women to show that we can do it.
Yeah.
That we can take care of this, and that we can contribute in this way.
And so let's say, 10 years from now, what would you like the co-op to become?
We were just talking about this earlier, saying, don't think about the interview. Just let's, between the three of us, what would we really like this to become? And we had, kind of interesting answers to that.
Mm-hmm.
I know personally, I really wanted to manifest. I wanted to become a very established, respected co-op, a honeybee, hippie hive honeybee co-op. I think I would like to see it grow in numbers. I would like it to see it be organized and be able to send people out to do education and political activism, and just, you know, to grow, to be a very, very solid, real organization.
Yeah, definitely. Are you guys going to try for nonprofit status?
I think we're, it's in the offing, yes.
Good. Good luck, huh?
Yeah.
It's really, really great. I mean, okay, so easy question for whoever wants it. What do you think is the most important thing to know about for, like, the average layman when it comes to saving bees? What's the easiest thing people can do to help out?
I think the easiest thing is to realize how connected the bees are with our food source. I mean, one out of every three bites of our food is directly because of them.
Yeah.
And being aware of that, being aware of what we're putting in our bodies, what we're putting in our lawns, what we're putting in our hives, it's that awareness that we really want to reach out to people, to a younger generation, to raise conscious people, to raise conscious beekeepers.
And that's a nice thing, too. If you start telling kids, like, kids absorb this stuff, and it sticks with them, you know? So, like, if you can get to the kids, you're ahead of the game already.
Absolutely.
Because it's on them. They're the ones that got to pick this mess up.
Absolutely.
So I think that that's really important as well. Do you guys do any activism right now?
I believe we do, Susan, with the climate march.
We were in the climate
march.
With our veils on and our signs.
Good.
And give bees a chance.
Good.
It was really a wonderful, wonderful, thrilling experience.
It was amazing.
Really.
It was so many people, you know, and it was nice to see how many people really know what is going on and what it involves and how many things it affects, you know? It's like the groups there were so many.
And everywhere, you know, we started out in the back and we kind of walked up towards the front, and everywhere we went, everyone was cheering
awesome.
For us and cheering about the bees.
Good.
I really think that the message is getting out there.
Good.
Absolutely.
And then actually, I have a question for you guys. Like, Home Depot, you know, a lot of people get the, sorry, I shouldn't have used that name. Okay, a lot of people buy their flowers from, like, big box hardware stores or tool stores or department stores, that kind of thing. Do you have to be careful about what you're buying in order for bee health?
Absolutely. A lot of those plants that you can purchase at those bigger stores are laced with pesticides. And they're sold as pollinator-friendly plants, and that's the danger. So I always buy USDA organic when I have that option to buy genetic, no GMO seeds, to be very cautious of planting seeds that are not genetically modified is something that we need to teach people those kind of words in that lingo.
So, like, I don't even know. Do any of these box stores even sell organic plants, or can you just assume that
Absolutely,
if you go to one
do.
Of these? They do.
They do. And and it's good to ask your retailers. I mean, asking these stores to provide these plants for you, which is a way that we can be proactive in that. Absolutely.
Totally. I have really, really enjoyed this. Let me see. Okay, last question for you guys, because we're running out of time, sadly. But what do you think is the most important thing to let people know about beekeeping?
I would say there's a few things. To know your beekeeper, to know your local beekeepers, ask questions, make those relationships, to see the hives if you can, that kind of stuff. Another thing would be to be conscious of the sprays, be conscious of the neonicotinoids. It's a really bad word in beekeeping, and just to be conscious of that kind of stuff.
And to be conscious of what you plant in your own yard, even if you're not a beekeeper. You know, it's because, you know, the bees travel for miles to collect their pollen. So it's very important that, you know, what you have in your own backyard is friendly to the pollinators.
Totally. It's a great point.
Yeah.
So what was the name of that documentary again? Because I want people to see that.
Queen of the Sun.
Okay.
It's a fabulous documentary on organic beekeeping.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, well, I'm going to be watching that too. And then how can people contact you guys if they want more information?
You can contact us on Facebook, Hippie Hive Honeybee Co-op.
Beautiful. And I just want to say thank you to you guys. This was great. And I'm really, really happy that you guys are doing this. And thanks for coming all the way out here. I know it's a really, really long drive and it's lousy weather and all that. But Susan, Mary, Diane, Sarah, thank you guys so much. I'm Celia Kutcher, the food healer. You can find Animal Instinct on Facebook. I hope you guys have a great week. I'll see you then.
The theme song for Animal Instinct is Never Coming Home by the Ranch Hands.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.